Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Now, I can tell you that Peter Bowman from Buninyong won the Friday face-off. Andrew Gaff got the most disposals out of the group selections. So Whitey gets his 2 points. He's on the board for season 2021, which I'm sure he's very, very happy about. In fact, there's real peacock action in the studio this morning. Chest is out, shoulders are back, chin is high, and he's ready for another big week of sporting discussion. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. No, just business as usual.
Ah, peacocking.
Took a little while to sort of step into gear, but it's nice to give Rammer a go. Now we'll start to go about my business.
Peter wins a $100 Ribera's voucher and Bataki hamper as well. Well done to you, Peter. Great work. Great work indeed. The footy tipping, I'm still in front. You're all on one behind me. Whitey, Rammer, Boomer and Jono, all one behind me.
It's a congested leaderboard. It's a peloton.
I'm just dangling the carrot just to give you something to chase. And as yet, you are unable to. In fact, I'm tanking. I tanked a couple of times on the weekend with my selections just to try and keep it tight.
Well, you've got to get your head around the fact that Carlton aren't any good and you've got to stop picking them.
I picked them last week when nobody else did and we won the points.
I know, but that was a good
podcast.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't matter. So we're actually even Stevens for the last couple of weeks. Rammer picked the Blues as well, just by the way, if you'll...
Well, that was ridiculous.
If you'll remember.
So, absolutely ridiculous.
You're still behind me, mate. I wouldn't be saying anything's ridiculous if you're a loser currently. I would suggest you just zip it until you get in front of the leaderboard. And then you can come at me with whatever you want to say. Adam Romanaskis is a Bombers champion. Former Bombers champion. They could use him. They could have used him on Saturday night. These days, he's manager to the Stars. He's back again on a Monday morning. Good morning, Rammer.
Yes, good morning.
You're a wet weather specialist. You would have dominated up at the Gabba on Saturday.
That was wet in that first quarter.
It was very wet.
They had to wear swimming hats and goggles.
Yeah.
It was very wet.
We played up there on a real wet night in 2000. Just didn't stop raining all night. But you can get those conditions up there, and Brisbane certainly played them well. And we'll talk about this later. A few of their star players, Essendon, ran back into some nice form.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disappointing night. Yes, I think out of the round, the biggest disappointment would probably be Carlton. I think the way they performed on Saturday night, they had an opportunity, missing some players, and they failed. They failed miserably on Saturday night, the Blues.
Well, let's have a look at that. Let's go through that. St Kilda would have been close up until that point. Collingwood, we expected that from the West Coast. That's okay. Bulldogs and Gold Coast. Gold Coast were disappointing. Sydney and the Giants, that was a good battle, like that one. Carlton were disappointing. Essendon were disappointing. Adelaide Free, I told you it'd be a good game. Told you.
Yep.
Hawthorn and Melbourne, Hawks were disappointing late. Oh. 8 of the last 9 goals they coughed up.
That was amazing. Max Gorn kicked that goal to take it to 12 points, and I think there was 10 minutes remaining. And then after that, wow.
Wasn't it just a procession after that?
Yeah.
Quite remarkable. And then the Kangas did a pretty good job against the Cats, who were still not convinced about, I think, is where we sort of sit with all of that. So you're probably right. Certainly on the podium, the Blues with their performance against the Power, because they go through, they had more inside 50s, they had more clearances, they had more tackles. There's a stat that I'll go through with Jim after 7 o'clock, which I think highlights the situation down there at the Blues and makes it very, very clear as to what's happening. I'll talk about that after 7 o'clock. We'll tease you.
I'm on my own with Carlton.
What do you mean?
I just don't think they're very good.
Well, no, I think that's relatively clear at the moment.
Yeah, but you guys pump them up like they're good. They're not good. I don't understand. I don't understand where you see Carlton being anything other than what they are.
So, two very good key defenders in Wiedering and Jones. Two very good midfielders in Cripps and Walsh. A key forward in Harry Mackay, who's proven now that he's going to be a good forward. They should be better.
They should be better than they are. I agree with that. I agree with that.
They should be.
Yep. I agree with that.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree.
I'll take you through the stat later on, and I'll tell you why. That's a little teaser.
Did Carlton beat Carlton on Saturday night, or
Port Adelaide didn't get out of third gear? They just cruise because they're a much better team.
Yeah, so Carlton beat Carlton.
No, Port Adelaide beat Carlton because
Carlton refused,
Port Adelaide are a much better team.
Carlton refused to put any pressure on any team through
the middle
of the ground. Oh, well, they'll just get the same result.
But they will because they have been and they will. They're just a team. And that's okay. Like, I'd be more disappointed if I was a St Kilda supporter on the way that they allowed Richmond to win by the margin they did, considering the fact that St Kilda made a final last year and actually played Richmond in the semi-finals last year. It's all about meeting the expectation on what they did last year. Now, last year's a little bit of an outlier because the game was played differently to what it's played this year. But I haven't seen anything to suggest that Carlton's anything other than what they are.
1-300-652-927. Do you agree with Whitey?
And I'm not being critical of them. I'm just saying they're not very good.
Can you
see
the green shoots coming through? Let us know. 1-300-652-927.
That's the problem with Carlton. They've made a lot of statements over the last few years that just come back and haunt them.
Green shoots.
What was the other? What was the membership? Yeah.
You smell what they're cooking. That was a while ago now. I reckon that would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, but still.
Have to be at least 10 years ago.
Well, it goes back to when Essendon's membership catch cry was whatever it takes.
Yeah, that was a bit of a setback.
That was a bad time for that to happen. Yeah. They were to know, clearly. No. Well, maybe they didn't. Who knows? No. It was funny. Hey, just off footy for a second, because we've got other things to talk about as well. Scotty McLaughlin's in action in the IndyCars, his first race. He's ninth in the IndyCars at the moment. So he's started in 12th on the grid and 17 laps in. He is in ninth position, so he's picked up a couple of spots, has our man Scotty. So we'll keep you up to date with that through the morning. We know he's very excited about the opportunity. We spoke to him last week, getting good crack. He's getting rave reviews over there from the fraternity, but he's currently inside the top 10, which is great work for Scotty McLaughlin.
Well, one of the reasons he's getting rave reviews just from the weekend is that he had some technical issues.
He did.
And got stuck on the grid because his car wouldn't start fundamentally. And he got himself going and only had one lap to be able to sort of record a time of note, and he did it really well under pressure. And then that sort of continued to happen through the whole qualifying situation that against the odds, he was able to put himself, you know, in the top 12. So yeah. I think a lot of people were just impressed with all of that, just as a starting point.
No, he did a good job, and he's now inside the top 10. So who knows what that means. It is a street circuit, so it's a bit more to his liking than perhaps the oval to start with.
Though. Yep.
So we'll give him a go to see where it all ends up to Scotty. Oh, he's up to seventh. There we go. Oh, just as we speak. He's picked up two spots. Nice work, Scotty McLaughlin.
Now I've got a challenge.
What do you got?
For you on Thursday. Obviously, we have Brad Johnson on Thursday.
Yes.
His daughter has wrote a song.
She has written a song.
Mm.
Ella J, as she goes by in the music industry these days.
Well, your challenge to get Ella to sing that song, I think, on Thursday morning.
Oh, on air.
With Brad. Absolutely with Brad.
Well, Brad has...
Well, it's a duet type sort
absolutely.
Of...
Absolutely.
Sharon. Sure.
Yeah.
Sunny or whatever.
I'm not sure we want to be hearing Brad sing songs.
I think we do.
I'm not sure anyone.
I love the Jono.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. Ella J, she's written the song. In fact, she's got a few. Because Jono has spoken about that on the program a couple of times. But there was one used for the AFLW finals campaign.
Correct.
Saw in the paper today. And he co-wrote it.
That's why we on air.
I'd like to find the inspiration, where he gets the inspiration for that sort of stuff. That's what I want to find. How he sits down, the method that he goes through. Is he,
we know why he loves
in the black room.
We know why he loves his music.
He does.
So he can be the critic.
I've got a feeling he might be the critic.
I'm just disappointed in Rammer at the moment. I'm finding it hard.
Why
to
is that?
Just his thoughts on Carlton. Just
don't get too bogged down by that. Goodness gracious me!
Well, he gets disappointed because we see most things very similar.
That's right.
In football, I see something different with Carlton. I really do. I really, really do. And you know what? It may be that we obviously when's Sam Doherty due to come in?
I think it's this week.
Thursday's coming in.
There you go.
There we go. Got a bit to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about, I think, with Sam. And yeah, look, clearly they'll be disappointed. Clearly the Carlton supporters will be disappointed.
Oh, trust me, they are.
You know, I imagine my friend Stewie's listening, who rings in often about Carlton, would be seething from from Saturday night.
But they lost to a team that played off in last year's preliminary final.
I understand that. But
and
if they
lost
want,
by a couple of points to Richmond, and Port Adelaide finished on top of the table last year.
The issue is...
We know Port Adelaide are good. Good. Put that aside.
But yeah. They were not in the game, Carlton, on Saturday night.
Because they were beaten by a much better team.
Without two of their stars in Butters and Dersma.
Yeah, but they've still got a lot of other good players.
I don't doubt that. But those two young men are very good players. They had an element to Port Adelaide.
Which meant that they may have struggled against a good team.
I disagree. I thought they were in the game on Saturday night.
They
had plenty of opportunities to be in the game. It's what happened on the back of that that would have been more disappointing than anything for Carlton supporters. A lot of looks. We'll talk about it after 7. We'll go through it in detail with Jim after 7 because I reckon there's a bit to talk about there. But before we do that, the other big story in football across the weekend wasn't in the Australian Rules fraternity, but in the World Game fraternity. What about Melbourne victory? 7-0 in the derby with Melbourne City. Now, we're going to get Scotty Jamieson on this week to talk about that.
And then Gonski.
And then Grant Brebner removed from his position, effective immediately. It's 13 goals they've coughed up in two derbies this year.
That's remarkable.
6-0 and 7-0. Quite remarkable.
To a team that, I mean, victory really didn't have much respect for Melbourne Heart and then Melbourne City if you look back at the history of it all, and often Hart would do quite well against victory against the odds, but there wasn't a lot of respect between the two teams.
Yep.
Hasn't that turned around?
Well, City are sitting on top of the table and victory languishing at the bottom, and now they don't have a coach. It was quite amazing scenes because the press conference after the game, Grant Brebner, who's just been told that his position is no longer his, is sitting alongside the chairman, Anthony DiPietro. There wouldn't be too many coaches that would do that. That was just cop the ball to the neck and then sit there next to the chairman who just pulled the trigger and say, no worries, I'm happy to sit here and cop this.
Well, it shows the class. Excuse me. Of Grant. Emotional for Grant, absolutely. Shows the class of Grant. No doubt about that. But, yeah, I don't think I would have sat there.
Yeah, they were down to 10 men after 35 minutes.
Put the backpack on the shoulder and say hello later.
He didn't really have a leg to stand on, though, did he?
No, I'm not saying he did, but he didn't have to sit there in front of
the media. No, I understand that. But I think this is the whole thing about Grant Brebner. And one of the key reasons he got the position was that he's a Melbourne Victory man. You know, he's a star player for them, a very popular member of the team, premiership player, all those sorts of things. I'm not saying that he got the job to help the club. He's obviously, you know, there was others that they could have gone with. But he's Victory through and through. And it's just got to the point where I think he's clearly realised himself that he's not the man. So I think it's a bit easier. I don't think you really could have argued the toss with the chairman when he came in and said, look, Grant, it's not really working.
No, I don't think either, but sitting there next to him in the at the table at the press conference post-game is a bit of a stretch.
Like, no, it's classy. We saw Brendan Bolton do a similar thing not that long ago. Brett Ratton, remember Brett Ratton doing it? Sitting there in a press conference with Stephen Kernahan.
Why are you so fixated on Carlton this morning? All your whole world just revolving around.
Well, I thought it was Ratton and Brendan Bolton were both very classy in those moments where they sat there when they'd just been sacked.
The Carlton Football Club's not far from our studio. The Carlton Mafia, they'll get you.
I guarantee you. I'd be careful if I was you. It has signalled the demise, not the demise, but the lack of presence in the marketplace from the A-League, though. When the Melbourne Victory aren't any good, it does lose a lot, the A-League, seemingly. Now, I know it's up against a fair bit through the summer and pushed back into the start of the football seasons, depending on which other codes you're into, rugby league or union or the AFL. But it does seem to be losing its presence in the marketplace. And if the Melbourne Victory is up and about, I think it would have a more significant presence.
Yeah, I agree with you, Half. I'm a bit sad for the A-League because I think the actual product this year has been as good as it's been for a long time. There's been a lot of goals scored. There's been a lot of really good matches. It's been a very entertaining product, but it's just not getting traction. And it's just, you know, that's just the reality of the situation.
So how many games did I have left in the season?
There's still quite a few.
We had this discussion last
week. No, I understand that. And, you know, clearly the season started later than they would have liked and all those sorts of things. But, I do think that the quality of the product seems to be better this year. You know, they've got a new team in. I don't know. There just seems to have been a lot of drama, a lot of things that should get more traction than they do. But that's just, you know, the way the sport's at the moment. But I agree with you, Half. I think the sport needs Melbourne Victory to be strong.
Yep.
It just does.
And the Victory fans, I wonder what they're thinking about the leadership of the club at the moment. This is the board. The problem with the Victory is the board are the shareholders.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not like an Australian rules club where the board is just people have been elected as members or whatever.
They're not winning. They don't make any money.
Not winning, but they also own the club, so they can pretty much do what they like. Like, they're not going to stand down. We had one director sell the shares of recent times and get out, but the rest of them own the club. So sometimes if you can sort of get them off the board, if they want to be there, they own the club, they can do what they like. So it's a real interesting position. They've put Marco Kurtz in not long ago. He lasted half a year, if that. And Grant Brebner didn't want the job, then all of a sudden did, and he was in. Now that hasn't worked. So at the end of the day, those who are making the decisions need to be held accountable for these sort of things as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's they've,
but they own the club.
Yeah, yeah. There's been some. I mean, it seems that they just haven't. And this happened across other sports too. That when there is a big personality who has had a lot of success as the main coach, which was the case with Kevin Muscat, and they just haven't recovered since. Just haven't been able to. Hey, there's another thing that's happening in the world game at the moment, Half.
What's happening?
Major controversy. We've discussed this before. But there's a report that 12 major European clubs, including the Big Six in England, have signed up to a breakaway European Super League.
What?
And, yeah, and this is we've talked about this before, but it's apparently... Well, at least there's been some signatures. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, Man United and Tottenham are part of the group. And then throw in Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Real Madrid, AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Juventus. So there's some big, big names that have joined this.
Gee.
And
that'd be cool watching that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
No Bayern Munich?
This is the information that I've got at this stage. But the Prime Minister has got involved, Boris Johnson, condemning
Boris.
It.
Okay,
there's a lot of disappointment around what this might mean. So I don't know whether it's going to happen because I can't remember. We got someone on to talk about this.
Yeah, we did.
About 6 months ago.
Rob Harris.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep,
that's right.
Who's a good journo in this sort of stuff.
It might be something to chase up during the course of the week. But that is big news. That is big news.
Tell you what else is big news, because I'm keen to find out a bit more about that. So we'll try and get a hold of Rob through the week, I reckon, Frank. And he's an early bird, gets a worm sort of fella, is Rob. So we'll get him early in the morning, perhaps maybe tomorrow.
Yeah,
good time to do it. Astra Sharma.
Yes.
Has taken out her WTA singles title.
She won. I was going to check that. We'll try and get her on.
25-year-old from Perth took out top seed Ons Jabeur in the Charleston final today. First ever victory over a top 30 ranked opponent and her first WTA title, the Aussie gun. So, well, young gun, emerging gun. So well done, Astra. That's a fantastic
result. That is an enormous result. She's been playing well now for a few weeks overseas. But that is a big result.
Lost the first set too, and then came out to win. So well done to Astra Sharma. Another win for Aussie tennis across the globe, which is great news. Very pleased about that. 25 years of age. Good stuff. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, gentlemen. Has the hot air balloon landed inside the studio yet?
Mate, it was close. It wasn't far off. I was just about...
It distracted
it's one
me.
Of those, one of those Richie Beno moments. Just reach out and touch it, Jeffrey. At the Gabba. Remember Dean Jones hit that big six? Reach out and catch it, he said. But
was it Dean Jones or Tom Moody?
Dean Jones hit six.
You said his name incorrectly. It's Big Tom Moody.
Big Tom Moody.
There's some people that they just need to put that little adjective in for each other. Big Max Gorn.
Yeah, that's true. Big Max Gorn, he's one of those. Big is often the one.
It's not
little.
There's no small Ivans in the world, is there?
How many Ivans are there in the world, do you think?
They all play for Richmond.
There might be a few small Ivans. There are zero small Ivans.
Yes. I stand corrected.
Yes. I think the Yvonne is always a sizable human.
Did I put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable there?
I think you might have. I think you might have, Jim. What did you take away from the weekend, Jim? What's number one thing you took away from the water footy on the weekend?
Well, I'm normally a positive beast, but I take away from this round that really I can only find sort of one winner where you find the positivity in it. Like, I'm not saying the others weren't winners, but it was more about the losers this week. you know, how we say, who's it say more about? I think this is one of these weeks where...
This is very un-Jimmy-like.
It is very un-Jimmy-like, and I've gotten the room of mirrors, and I've tried to straighten myself out, but I can't... Every time I go back to look at the scores from the rounds, it's disappointing, because it's more actually...
Can I guess the winner?
Can I flick it a little bit to the positive, is the fact that it was professional-like from the winners.
Yep.
Like, it was just... Yep. They did what they had to
do.
So,
what you expected of them?
Yeah, Richmond blew St Kilda off the park, but they for two and a half quarters when you're at the game, it was just go through the motions. They were always good enough, had class. West Coast the same against Collingwood. The Dogs, you know, blew them off the park, went through the motions, then ran away.
Suns, yep.
Yep. The Port Adelaide pair, just a better class unit than the Blues.
Yep.
The Lions, better class unit than. The propagandas mob. The Adelaide Freo game.
Stop laughing.
I quite like it. It's good.
The Adelaide Freo game. But then Geelong, North Melbourne, I think sort of Geelong mailed that in, and it was a good effort from North Melbourne. But I think Melbourne was the one positive for me.
I thought you were going to say the Giants were the positive.
I thought you were going to say Fremantle.
Well, that were the two arm wrestles where... Flip of the coin for me when going into the round. So, yeah, it could have gone either way.
The reason I thought you were going to say Fremantle was more the way they won, because I think that was the game of the week, and we were going to find out a lot about both of those teams, and fair. Fremantle to win on the road. But when they played well, when they started to run the football, they looked very good.
Wasn't it, my concern with that performance from Fremantle... Not concerned, because they had a good win and it's a fantastic effort, and they're sitting, what are they, 3-2 at the moment, just outside the 8. Wasn't the concern that was Fife and Mundy that got it done?
Oh, I thought Brayshaw was exceptional, and Chera got injured in the first quarter, so
yeah, true.
I think that had a
Brayshaw
bit to do with it as well.
You've ruffled some feathers here.
Seemingly I have.
No, I thought it was...
I don't understand that comment.
No, I'm just saying, like, we know that they're the champions of that team.
So they should get it done.
No, but isn't the real sign of progress when others are stepping up and being that player? Now, Brayshaw, I'll give Whitey that too, that Brayshaw was pretty handy as well. And he's that emerging sort of middle-tier age bracket leader now that's doing great things for the Dockers. But don't they need more is what I'm saying. They need others
Brayshaw's
to be stepping
up. Brayshaw's had 33 possessions yesterday.
I just said Brayshaw.
He acknowledged him.
Yeah.
So what more do you want?
But this is the thing, a developing team, which Fremantle are, what do you want to do? At the end of the game, we'll put Fife and Mundy on the bench just so the other guys can do it.
It's not what I'm saying, Adam. I'm saying that if we're talking about overall impressive performances, I would think if we're looking at progress, you'd want to be seeing some other young players stepping up.
I actually don't think that Fife had a massive impact on the game. I thought he was okay. I actually thought it was a fairly even performance. You know, Akers started the game very well. Sarong, whenever he gets the ball, he uses it so nicely. I think he's an absolute jet.
Sarong?
Yeah,
he is.
I think he's really good. I know he's the rising star winner, but I think he's a bit special. Collier stood up and kicked two goals and kicked the ball really well, which was a bit of a surprise.
Propaganda.
I just thought, Adelaide came into the game with all this confidence and playing really good football. I know it's only Adelaide, but I just thought it was a really big tick for the Dockers.
5 goals in the last quarter of 3 to get the job done by 12 points yesterday at the Adelaide Oval. It was a great win. It was a very important win for Fremantle. There's no doubt.
I think they needed it.
Yep, probably.
Where do you have Freo at the start of the year?
I had them sort of bottom 6 somewhere.
10 to 14?
Somewhere around there, I reckon.
See, I had them in a very small window of 8 to 10.
Did you?
Yes.
Narrowed the field.
Well, you are.
Right now, you are spot on.
So for them to finish in that position, they're the sort of games they have to win. And so I think it's a big tick.
Yeah, because I like their mix of... We talk about the Swans with their young talent, but also the experienced players still playing well. And it's a bit of what Rammer's touching on. You still want the champions to play well. Like Mundy and Fife keep delivering, but... Ryan's
excellent.
He's a super player, all Australian, of course. But I just liked their young mix. Probably because I had the advantage of covering a lot of their games last year, even though in the COVID bubble, I got to sit down and watch a lot of it. And I like the way Longmuir has built them. So bed down the defence, but it wasn't bed down defence. Everyone get back. Let's play slow out of defence. It was get back in defence and let's get out of our defence, if that makes sense.
And they weren't doing that early. But they weren't doing that early in that game. And
no.
But that was what kind of impressed me about them, is that they stuck to it and they've kind of got it on their terms. It was an interesting game, as Daniel forecast it would be.
Oh, Jane Bunn over there doing the forecast.
12 points to go to Fremantle. Adelaide now slipped to, what are they? They're 3-2 as well as Fremantle. It's a good start for both those teams.
It's good for the Crows.
I'd be happy, both those teams, being 3-2 after five rounds.
How many did your man kick?
My man only kicked two, didn't he?
And he gave one off in the goal square, too.
Yeah,
what's
silly.
He kicking?
I want 100.
At Taylor Walker.
Yes.
He may have picked up an injury in that game, too.
Ooh.
Well, I think he was carrying an injury into the game.
There was some feedback post-game, though, that he'll be okay. It was the information that was coming out of the Adelaide room. So hopefully that's right, because we want 100 goals. That's what we want, Jim.
Yep.
We've got him sitting on top of the leaderboard at 22. Now, what are we? Five rounds in. That's 4.4. Is that enough? No, it's not.
Well, Toby Green could have eight on the board.
Let's go there. To the Giants and Sydney. That game.
It's not as good a segue as you normally give, but
no,
let's
it's not
go.
Not bad, though. Not bad, though. Two-point victory, 9-17. 71, the Giants, 10-9, 69, the Sydney Swans. Toby Green kicked 1-7.
His 1 goal was his last shot, too.
So he kicked 2-1.
So he kicked 1-7. Last week it was Nat Five kicking 6 points, six straight behinds for his goal. And Toby Green this week kicking 1-7. I want to say, the more I watch Toby Green, the more I love him. Now, I've liked the way he's gone about his business for quite some time now, but he's seemingly, and you're closer to him than we are, Jim, he seemingly is as spiritual a Giants leader as ever has been in a footy club in my recent time. I think he is absolutely the nucleus, the crux, the key to the GWS Giants. You work with him a bit closer than I do. Mm. Do you see that level of importance from Toby Green to the Giants?
I do. And, I've had the advantage of being a lot closer than you guys over the last couple of years, and that's probably why when I've come in here and I've been a strong defender of Toby Green. I know some of his actions early in his career has brought it upon himself, I guess, some negativity, and he owns that. But I think sometimes that clouds people's vision of his pure ability. And what we're seeing this year...
I agree with that.
I think... the clouds are coming back a bit for a lot of people in the general football public. Now, there's always going to be people going, oh, I hate Toby Green, he's this, he's that. But you can't deny his ability.
His impact on his teammates, mate.
Exactly.
That's the thing that I love. I know he can play, but his teammates grow a leg when he's out there.
Yeah, and that's a sign of his maturity too. Like, he's getting to that stage in his life, his age, he embraces where he's at the club. It's been a progress for him over the last 2.5 to 3 years where he's gone from being... good player at his own club to a good player in the competition to a really good leader amongst the club to actually assuming a leadership role.
Yeah.
So it's just been that progression. And I think his football has grown with that as well.
The thing with Toby is also how he's kind of reinvented himself as a footballer. He was that midfielder that used to get so much of the footy but used to butcher it a lot.
Yep.
Whereas now he's that sort of medium-sized forward that actually... doesn't usually waste the ball. Now, I know he's kicked all those points on the weekend, but a lot of those are sort of opportunistic kicks out of packs and things like that. But if he's got the ball sort of 40 metres out in a set shot situation, even on the run, you expect him to kick the goal.
Absolutely.
He likes those moments.
That the difference between him and a lot of other players that are in that sort of discussion as top 50 players is that he craves, a bit like Dustin Martin, he craves those big moments. He'll actually perform better when the pressure is higher.
Yeah, there's a really resilience factor to that. Like, you've got to be willing to accept the feedback when you miss, but then keep putting yourself in the situation, you know, time and time again.
It was a really interesting last quarter, watching, one, how the Swans tried to play, but then, two, how GWS played.
What are the Swans trying to do, Ramit?
They sat back.
They tried to hold on.
Yeah, they just sat back, and they didn't want to score.
That was the old Sydney
bit, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was an absolute smacking contested possession last quarter.
It was. Mm. But this is the issue with Sydney. It's probably going to be a bit of a hindrance that they're playing at the SCG because of the type of player they have now in that
About that last week.
We did.
A couple of text messages were about
that. But this is the first proof of it.
Yep.
I think on a bigger deck, they probably win that game. But the game becomes this contested game. Now, you think to yourself, well, they've still got Josh Kennedy and Luke Parker. They should be able to get over the line in that game. But
they couldn't get them over the line.
No. But the problem is, I think now because they're in such a mindset now of this new style that they want to play, they probably forgot. I don't know. I watched the game again when I got home, because Essendon was just, anyway, we'll get to them later.
We might.
But they sat back, and they, even that last stoppage where you look at Josh Kelly, he kicks the goal. He was able just to weave his way through, really, with no body pressure, and then kicks the goal.
That was a direct tap from a Sydney ruckman, too.
Mm. Yeah. I'm glad you raised that point, because I actually even thought last year, and I started to look at the Swans, I go, actually, the way your side is built, the SCG is the worst ground for you. That their forwards like to operate a bit of space, and you know they've got some room to lead. Like, you know, Buddy Franklin, I know he's back in the side, but you get him a bit more space. He can move in. Papley, one-on-one. When Hayward's forward, one-on-one, Heaney. Like they don't want it all crowding in on top of them, which you can do really easy at the SCG. You take two strides from the centre, you're inside forward 50.
You go for your life. You want to take the ball out wide at the SCG, go for your life.
Yeah, have it. You're not scoring. But, yeah, speaking of that inside, it did suit the Giants. Taranto, Hopper, Ward, Green. That's right in their wheelhouse.
Well, Tom, not Toby.
No, not Toby.
So yeah, Sydney only had three goal kickers for the game. Franklin, Haywood, and Papley. Franklin 5, Haywood 3, Papley 2. It wasn't, they didn't, not as, I'm not saying they shut them down in the last quarter, but you don't want a spread like that. You want more options. Now, this is a rare occasion where Sydney kicked more goals and lost the game.
Yes,
it's
that's
a
true.
Very rare occasion that happens in
Take
football.
That for data.
Take that for data. Very good performance. Josh Kelly is someone's making headlines, and people always talk about Josh Kelly because, A, he's got this unusual deal where you get a seven-year option on his
eight-year option
on his term. Well, hang on, what is it?
Seven.
The last year's club option.
Mate, seven-year option. He's got the director here. We're taking his word, not just you. Seven-year option on his terms. He started the year slow, Jim. Your quote in the paper today in Robbo's Tackle, he's playing a new... adopted a new role, embraced it, and all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, we're seeing the Josh Kelly that we expect to see.
Hitting the scoreboard and having impact.
Having impact on games.
Yes, with his disposal. Playing high half forward, which frees him up a little bit. It actually helps the Giants. Have disposals. But his disposal is having real impact in the last even 3 weeks. His game against Melbourne was pretty good. He was playing as a high half forward as well, where he first started to really get that as his core role, not just going to half forward because you're part of the midfield rotation. Five goals in the last couple of weeks. It's been sensational, and he's embraced. And I think you see there's a fair bit of energy in his football. I know speaking to a number of people, it's like the old saying, playing with a smile on your face. There's a fair bit of bounce to his game at the moment.
Is this a role that he will stay with, or is it a role to get him back into form? It's almost like is it like putting a horse over jumps just to give him the give him the edge back before he goes back to normal, resume normal service?
No, I think it's another layer to his game, which is fantastic because he's 26.
Like his powers right now.
Yeah. But it's another layer. So you can put him in the midfield if they want to run with him. Let's see if we can test that matchup and go to half forward. Different looks. You can put him back up on the wing. I just think it's another layer to his game, which makes him an even better player.
He's certainly playing well in the last couple of weeks. Hey, and one of the reasons the Giants have turned things around. Have you changed your mind on the Giants?
I've got one more round.
Yeah, we did say round six.
Round six. Last week they were out. This week they could be back in. But
the Bulldogs Friday night.
Good Canberra. Test.
Yes.
In Canberra, Manuka.
So, just to finish off.
The Honey Oval.
Just to finish off on the Giants and the Swans game, and just to back up what we're
saying. You need Dwayne Russell to call the game, and they'll be dripped in honey.
Manuka.
Just to back up what Jim and I are saying about the SCG. So you look at the stats in the last quarter. Disposals alone. Taranto, 9. Lockie Ash, 8. O'Halloran, 8.
Inside-ish type player.
Toby Green, 8. Then you look at Sydney's top three. Sam Reed, 6. Luke Parker, 6. Lewis Melican, 6.
John Cougar.
They just lost. They lost their home. They lost everything in that last quarter. And credit to the Giants. Because they were, they're on their knees really with injuries and guts and determination.
You off the Swans? Anyone off the Swans?
No.
Hang on a minute. Kate Hudson, now the Swans.
Shaky ground over there.
What's happened here?
No, I just would like... I think they're a bit like we were saying before, a couple more weeks just to see
You got one. You got one.
They're young, and I just those young players have been really good for them over the first 4 weeks. I thought they were pretty average against Essendon Sydney, and they were lucky to get the win.
SCG,
and then kind of felt like that was the loss that might have been coming. I still picked Sydney to beat the Giants, but I was a bit worried. I think they're going to be good long term, but just on this season, I'm not.
They have Gold Coast at Metricon on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, they should be 5-1.
Yeah.
That's a good start to the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll see what happens. We won't go too early because we've got another week to digest and absorb all the information.
It's always a big game, Anzac Eve. It's a great occasion for our footy club, our supporters, and clearly the position where we sit at the moment's a great position to sit, but we know we're up against. We're up against a really strong footy club, and there's a lot that goes into this game, but more importantly, I think it's just going to be a great game of footy. We want to get as many of our Melbourne supporters there as possible, enjoy the game, and hope that we can put on a really good performance.
I've got a feeling, Simon Goodwin, who was speaking after the game yesterday about Anzac Day Eve, that game on Saturday night will be bigger than the game on Sunday. Melbourne and Richmond's going to be an absolute cracker. Now, I know there's a bit on the line for the Sunday game.
What are you talking about?
I just chose the copy.
Mate. Yeah.
No, but the game itself will be bigger.
Who cares about the losers, mate? 1-4.
There's one. It's Anzac Day.
We understand the day.
It does look pretty cool, the service at night, though.
The Saturday night is a ripper. The night before is a ripper. So that's going to be a great game of football, let alone the lead into a huge Anzac Day for the country, let alone football, on Sunday. But it's going to be a corker. They were too good yesterday. The Melbourne Football Club over the Hawks. In the end, it was a smacking. It was 50 points, eight and the last 9 goals. Before we get to that, just while I remember, if you don't, as the director of the GWS...
I had a feeling you were going to just go there.
If you don't make that jumper your number one away jumper, we can't be friends.
No, I'm very comfortable with that.
That was the best outfit I've seen in footy ever.
They've got another option too, where they go the bright orange rather than... So the white's gone.
I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that.
Why?
Because they play Richmond or Collingwood.
That's why they've got two alternate
issue. I prefer to have a conflict. That's so good, that outfit.
Awesome. It's still boring. There's no doubt it looks training awesome. Jumper.
It's, what? It's a fantastic jumper. It's a fantastic outfit.
Make that in long sleeves. Oh,
yes.
Delicious.
Yes, Jim. Yes.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, Jim, we can't be friends.
Yep. Anyway. I don't mind the old orange pitch too.
That's my threat for today.
The old orange, you look cool.
We're going away from the white jumper, which is good. Fremantle can't help it because they're dark or white.
Port
Adelaide white. Have got... Yeah, but they went with... Even they wore the grey on Saturday night. They've also got a teal option that they sometimes wear. Who's the other team that's gone... Melbourne's gone away from the white. They've got the royal blue or the dark blue. So light.
They don't clash with anybody, Melbourne.
Look at the four
of course
us.
They do.
Look at us.
Yeah, the royal.
Fashionistas we are.
Huh?
Royal fashionistas.
That's what I'm saying. That's their alternate strip because they would clash with Essendon or Carlton, the dark.
Did we see you were there yesterday?
I was
at
there.
The MCG job for the broadcaster, the TV broadcaster. It was a 50-point margin in the end. It was 8-2 in the last quarter, 8 of the last 9 to the D's. Big Max Gorn, by the way. Big Max Gorn, you've got to say it like
that.
Yeah,
Big Max Gorn.
He's going to join us tomorrow morning on the Inner Sanctum, so that's going to be good fun. But he was something else again. He's $19, I think, for the Brownlow, Big Max.
Should be $1.90 in my eyes.
Is he favourite in your eyes?
In my eyes. I know Dustin Martin is super. Petrarca catches your eye. But as far as... Actually, let's frame it this way. Most valuable player, he's the equal most valuable player in the game at the moment.
With...
Dustin. That's like as far as impact...
$26 at the tap.
As far as impact on his own team, but impact on what the opposition does. So that's how I sort of judge most valuable player.
Yep, fair enough.
So you can have a big impact on your team or you can have a big impact on the opposition, but those two, I think, completely affect the way their own side and the opposition side prepare for games or the way the game's played out. Like you have to kick around, Max. Like, coming out of defence, where is he? We've got to go completely opposite side of the ground. How we set up around the ball? Do we have to bring extra players up around the contest to mitigate how good he is in clearances? Like, he had, 25 touches as well?
Yeah, hit 26 yesterday.
26. Yeah, even...
Five clearances, 26 touches, a goal.
Even with his importance, and Melbourne probably could have exposed Hawthorn more, they did it a lot more in the second half. When Gorn went to the ruck. He came forward with the play and stayed forward, which is really clever. And they should do this a lot more, because you're thinking, geez, this is going to be hard to match up against. Big boy didn't come back up into the ruck.
Stayed deep.
So then they're going, well, who's Hawthorn's second ruck? Hardigan had to come up around the ground on Luke Jackson. Now, I know Jackson's young, but he's a better ruck than Hardigan.
Yep.
And he's probably going to be a better ruck than nearly 99% of the other second rucks. So well, yeah, this is what I'm talking about, the impact on the game. I think he's the equal most valuable player in the game.
Well, he had 10 marks.
8 contested.
19 contested possessions and 5 inside 50s, plus that important goal in the context of the match. And I just think what is helping Max Gawn is the development under the radar a little bit of Luke Jackson. I think he's really starting to come into his own. He looks a very, very exciting player.
Yeah. Pick 3 for the D's a couple of years ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, he and Cozzy together.
It means he can play different roles, Max, rather than just be the ruckman and play a certain sort of almost like a following role. They can be a lot more tactical with the way that they use him because Jackson's coming on.
Max, at one stage, was just rucking all day, and you know, in the ruck, you get bashed up. You're bashing into your direct opponent continually. You're backing back into packs. But now he can go and rest somewhere and, you know, just take that workload away from him a little bit. So Jackson looks every bit the modern-day follower. Like, you look at his tap work, ball hits the ground, and he's off. He's away, and he's looking for the ball. He's looking for a body. He's going to be a very good player.
But even the way Ramahe was leading up to the ball and taking marks, and he, sort of as a natural sort of key position forward as well. He, in a way, he's keeping Wiedemann and Brown at bay at the moment. That they did really well in the VFL.
So Wiedemann kicked 7, Brown kicked 3. Yeah. And there's the other one. Somebody else kicked 2, one of the other key forwards. Mitch Brown.
He played senior.
Yes. Sorry.
I think the key thing about Melbourne was that they were able to blow Hawthorn away in the last quarter, as they did. They've kicked 104 points without Brown, without Wiedemann, and without Fritsch.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's, I think, the best part about Melbourne is they're kicking scores.
When Max kicked that goal in the last quarter, there was 10 minutes remaining. They were 12 points ahead. And then to go and win by 50.
They did a similar thing against the Giants, who had injuries up in Canberra. But they get involved in this arm wrestle, and I reckon an old Melbourne, it would have gone right down to the wire. But with the new Melbourne, they're showing that maturity that they don't panic. Mm. And they stick to their structures. They stick to the way they want to play. They stick to the way they want to play.
I've never
and then
ever
move
thought
on.
I'd hear those words come out of your mouth.
Who are you? Stick to the structures.
You changed.
You know what I'm saying? No, they don't panic. They don't go away from the way they want the game played, and they back themselves in. They'll get it on their terms.
Well, that's been the impressive thing for me in the early part of the season is their maturity, and we've spoken about it. They don't panic when the opposition kicks a goal or two. They just settle down. But where they added a layer for me yesterday was Hawthorn lulled you into a slower style. They take the tempo out of the game, and they're doing the old-fashioned, we'll try and beat you 70-60, because to their credit, their transition's amazing, Hawthorn. Like, they get back really hard, they defend, and then they need Impey and CJ to try and explode them out.
Yep.
So they get you on the counterpunch. But what impressed me about Melbourne is, okay, we identify that at halftime. We're playing too slow. Hawthorn are allowing us to have marks, and you can feel your boots a bit, and you can go, I'm getting the ball, I'm marking it. But you look early doors, and McDonald and Jackson were getting a lot of marks, but they're getting them 80, 90 metres from goal. So they turn around, they're kicking to a crowd. So it's almost like Hawthorn going, have that, because in the 10 seconds you've taken to mark that footy, you give us more time to get back. So they couldn't score. But after half time, it was started to hit the one on the 45. Let's get a bit more overlap. And that's when you saw that long, deep entry to Cozzy Pickett one-on-one. We saw McDonald, instead of being 80 metres out, he was starting to mark it inside forward 50. You know, Mitch Brown, mark it inside forward 50. So being able to make that adjustment in game is, again, another tick to maturity.
Salem, Hibbert and Rivers started to run.
Yeah.
They started to just go.
Yeah.
Rather than that first half, they were sort of sitting back a little
bit. Yeah, they got it up near the
wings.
Yeah.
So then they just went.
So, Rama, can you see, and there is a sort of obviously connection here, but can you see a forward line that has Brown and Wiedemann in it for the Demons moving forward?
Yeah, of course.
So what's the setup?
I don't
with
know.
McDonald?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's, you know, you listen to Simon Goodwin after the game. He goes, I've got a good problem. So how that...
First time he's had that problem.
Yeah, how that... How he sets it up, or what his vision was in the preseason of how that was. But I don't think probably any of us, after the way Tom McDonald has been going over the last 2 years, we expected him to be where he is. But he had another really solid game.
So, Jimmy, the feeling is that Brown would straighten them up, because they do tend to go a bit wide into the pockets and that sort of thing. And that will, but does that kind of take away also their strength a little bit, because Melbourne have become so unpredictable moving forward?
Yeah, but then you've also got to add Fritsch.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Cozzy. Yeah. It.
Well, Fritsch and Cozzy aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
No.
They are locked.
Well, they're the point
they've
of difference. That's the
what I'm
depth.
Saying
they're,
is
they're,
that...
They've got a lot of depth in that team where they can almost experience. So their next five is Richmond. Obviously, that's a 50-50 game
that's
right
now. That's the biggest test.
Yep. Then they go North Melbourne in Tassie, Sydney at the MCG, Carlton at the MCG, Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval, and then they come into... then they come into...
Good, Daniel.
Then they come into the Bulldogs.
They're going to be 9-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dees.
So tiebreaker, Matt, tiebreaker yeah. game... On...
They got them. No, I don't think so.
Against Richmond.
That's not a tiebreaker. Well, it might be a new tiebreaker game for them, but they won those tiebreaker games. Their tiebreaker games were Freo, Giants, St Kilda. That set up their season because they won all those three.
No, but I'm saying are they now better? We probably all had them in the bottom four of our eight.
I didn't have been there. I had me just outside the
eye. Yeah, I had door knocking.
Yep.
But now...
And I were the good judges. Yeah,
now are we saying they could be top four this year?
Well, I'm not prepared to go top four.
Oh, they're top four now.
But 9-1, they get
9-1,
they're
top four.
Yeah. They get the 9-1, they are. But we'll see what happens.
9-1, you can mail a couple in and you're top four.
1-300-652-927. Jimmy said before, Max Gawn is equally the most valuable player in the competition with Dusty. Have you got another nomination? I'd like to hear it. 1-300-652-927.
Well, do you? Any of you? Do you? All of you?
All of you. Well, you're all experts. You're experts in thinking about that. I'm talking about the system of the show here.
I think...
I'm just trying to run through the run sheet here.
Right, eh? The Bond's pretty good at the moment.
The Bond. We'll get to the Bond. Yeah. We'll get to the Bond.
The Bond's pretty good at the moment.
No, but the answer to that question, I'm not taking it away from the Bond. Like how I prefaced it.
I think Fife falls into that category a bit.
No, I don't think so at the moment. I don't think both, like he affects both sides in the manner. I think he does, but not to the level these two are at the moment.
I think the Bond's probably if you're going to go top three.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm saying if you're going to go top three.
No,
but
it's Martin, Gawn, Bontempelli.
I got Martin and Gawn at the top.
Well, I'm putting Bont there. Yes, don't look at me like that.
So if he missed a week, one of their 10 midfielders wouldn't fill the void.
He's more than a midfielder.
Yeah,
he's
changes more than their that. Whole look.
Change. Correct, Rammer. This is why you're on the big bucks.
We'll argue it out.
Well, I haven't got time. We're going to get to a break shortly. We're going to talk about the game yesterday first. Mm-hmm. So the Hawks are sitting 17th on the ladder. It is interesting. Just notice this, just by the way, just from a percentage perspective. The team in 13th has a worse percentage than the team in 17th.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have happened too many times before after round five.
Well,
St Kilda. 71.4. Hawthorn in 17th, 77.6. That's a disastrous outcome for the Saints, just by the way. What about what happened yesterday at GMHBA Stadium? Let's get that game done so we can move backwards in the weekend's activities.
I thought you were going to a break.
No, getting this one because we...
Because you didn't want to answer the Bond question.
Well, do the Bond later. I've got to get this stuff.
I love Bond. The Bond.
A really boring game of football.
Well, this is there's an SMS that came in. A good lead-in from you, Rammer.
Yes,
very good lead-in.
Good, Rammer.
I hope you guys, all of you... I didn't put that in, but I did. Call out the fact that Geelong are now the least watchable team in football. I don't necessarily think that's a new phenomenon.
No.
I think that's... And they don't really care about that, just by the way. They just want to win games of footy, which they continue to do in the home and away season. Missed out last year, of course, in the grand final, but went close. They don't really want to be an attractive, dashing, daring football team. They want to just control the game to the point where it's bordering on boring at times. But they just get the job done every time. They're not playing overly well, I don't think, Jim. They won by 30 points yesterday against the Kangaroos. But they got the job done again.
Yeah, they want to be machine-like. They want to be the Geelong machine. So you plug it in, you can plug some players in, you knock up wins. It's good. They'll still play finals. But it's not, as you said, it's not attractive. But you add Cameron back in and different personnel.
Who's coming back in next week, says Chris.
So let's see how that works.
Actually, can I ask you, Rami, do you think Cameron being added in and another game under Dangerfield's belt and then Rowan back in, do you think personnel will change the way they play? Or
well,
just...
that's what I'm hoping.
But do you think it will?
Because I predicted at the start of the season they could be 130, 140
you
points
did
a
too.
Week.
You did too.
Mm.
Just, but on evidence of the opening, what are we, 5 weeks in, they're going to be that, you know, 60 to 80 point team again this year.
I think they feel that when they get the forward line in place, they will move it quicker, but they're waiting for that to happen.
I'll throw this another. Are they capable of doing that? Are they capable of moving the ball quicker?
Of course they are, because we've seen them do it. They can do it.
How many times have we seen it?
Well, not a lot this year, but we didn't see it a lot from them last year in the first 4 or 5 games. But then we saw them have that breathtaking period of matches through the middle part of the year where you go, finally, that's what we want to see them do. And then it sort of went away again.
Is it dangerous half to be that personnel driven then to help you score? Like Richmond are a system.
I don't think, to answer your question from my perspective, I don't think they will change too much. Mm-hmm. I don't think they will go from 10 goals a game to 16 goals a game.
But that's what Chris is saying. They are a system.
Yeah.
So we're just seeing their system.
That's why I asked the question. Yeah.
From the outside, it feels like they fiddle a lot. They're so technical that they do all these little bits. They don't let them play. It's all system-based, yet they've got a lot of players that you just want to see play.
Yeah.
But they don't do it that way. I get tense and stressed watching them.
Because they make it so hard.
Because you see all these players and you want to see them just play beautiful football, and they don't, and it frustrates you watching them. It's like going through a torture chamber.
27 scoring shots to 12 last night. They did not need to make that game so hard.
That's what I mean. It's like they're tinkering, they're like a sort of nutty professor type of stuff with sort of beakers and all this sort of stuff that they're trying to put together this potion.
I like too much. Use the Bunsen burner in science. That was good fun. Get the flame going.
Can I just briefly mention, I thought the Kangaroos showed a bit.
Yeah. They did.
Like, and I think that could very easily be in a situation where Geelong won by 100 points. And, you know, North Melbourne scared the hell out of Geelong for quite a while. And they were really competitive. I don't mean that to be patronising, but no. I just reckon that considering the beating they got on Good Friday, the way that they've sort of responded since has been okay.
They did yesterday, North Melbourne, they were beaten in every statistical category except tackles. So they applied pressure. And I think for a young developing team, if you can apply pressure on a consistent basis, you'll stay in games for a lot longer. And that was proven, obviously, last night. They were plus 13 in the tackle count. So they were up in Geelong's faces, and that's what kept them in the game.
Yep.
Simple.
I thought they put in a good performance.
Yep. So after that Good Friday performance, they led Adelaide at three-quarter time and fell away. And then they led Geelong for large portions of the match in Geelong.
In the first half.
Yeah, but that's right. I'm imagining inside the footy club, that's the sort of wins that they're looking for.
Yep.
Yeah, little wins. But the Cats are still too good by 30 points yesterday, or last night at GMHBA Stadium. They sit, what are they? They're 3-2, eighth in the ladder at the moment.
They're okay.
Are you still buying the Cats, Jim?
Yeah, they'll be still knocking on the door top four.
What have they got? They've got another 7 games at Cadinia Park.
There you go, there's 10.
They'll get all 10 those, wins. Probably.
They won't get Gary in the mid-season draft. That can't happen.
Why not?
Because he's ineligible.
Because
he's
retired. Not delisted.
He's not delisted.
And hasn't been retired for longer than a year.
If you sign a Form 43, that makes you retired. But if you don't, then the club has to...
delist you.
Officially remove you from the list, which is completely
different. So Cade Simpson was delisted.
Yeah.
Gary Ablett retired. Different outcomes.
Is that a Cyril Rioli rule, almost? There was that put in place because...
No.
I think it's always... 43's always been there.
Mel Michael, didn't he retire from Brisbane and end up at Essendon after he retired?
He did.
I think Essendon drafted him.
But Sheeds rang him up and... Yeah, there was a lot of controversy around that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So how would Gary be able to play then?
He can't.
There's no way he can go...
Play AFL footy this
next year.
So he can't go into an open mid-season draft?
He's retired.
That's a shame.
No, he's retired. He can't do that. So there you go.
He still said, but did I read correctly where he said, I'm still a couple of months away? His shoulder rehab.
He said he's
still a couple of months away.
Didn't he say he's upping his his recovery to try and be back for the last six?
Fantastic.
That's real local footy stuff.
When you're the little master, you do as you like. Yeah, but we'll get to
break. Hey, but just one thing though, if you're at
4-6.
But if they want to go to a contender, most contenders have got their positions bedded down.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good point.
These are the games you want to play in. Like, you want to play in these games and you want to compete against the best. Now, at the end of the day, you want to beat the best. And that's what we've got to get to. And right now, today, it tells us that we're not there yet. And we get another opportunity next week against Brisbane, who I saw they just had a big win, so they're in form. So, great challenge for us. Can't wait for our members and our fans to get out there and support us again. I think it's at Marvel next week, so... we look forward to these challenges and you want to play the good teams, and that's what we need to do. We need to beat these teams to show our progression.
David Teague, the coach of the Blues, after their loss to the Pair on Saturday night by 28 points at the MCG. They want to be a part of those big games, Jim. They're just not up to it just at the minute from what we've seen.
No. And it's still the same issues going on each round.
What are the issues, Jim? Explain it for the Carlton fans out there who are sitting there going, my God, is there any chance?
Is there any chance you can transition defensively when you don't have the ball? Is there any danger?
1-300-652-927, Blues fans.
What, just asking if there's any danger their club can... 80 more effective disposals the Pair had.
Yep. So they were 67 more 80. Overall.
Just having 80 more possessions. Let's four... good players on the ground, but effective. That's just meaning, there you go, we can just get our game going. No wonder they get easier scoring shots.
Yep.
Like transition and, you know, players, I hear a lot of the feedback from Carlton supporters, you certainly come thick and fast after a loss when you're covering games and things like that. You know, this player's playing there, this player's playing there. Yeah, it does look like players have almost, I'm not playing in my number one position. Bad luck. Embrace that position, win that position, and it might help your team play better.
A stat I want to throw at you.
Throw it.
Just
throw
on, and your transition conversation leads into it beautifully. Now, the Blues had 75 chains of possession. They got the ball back 75 times on Saturday night. They kicked 4 goals, 11. The Pair had 72, so 3 less, and they kicked 10 goals, 1 from those chains. So it says to me a couple of things, Grandma. It says to me that the efficiency of Port Adelaide going forward is strong, but Carlton's transition once they lose possession and ability to defend that possession loss is something that is a big problem for them, has been all year long. 10 goals, 1. That's clinical from an efficiency perspective. The 75 chains for the Blues, 4 goals, 11, says the opposite, that the Blues' midfield forward connection is off and the Power can defend that and set up much better behind the ball when they do lose transition, lose possession.
Can I be glass half full
for
Carlton fans?
Yeah.
What happens if it's 11 goals for?
But that's what I'm saying. They're forced into errors. They're forced in.
That's where you take the shots.
They missed a few shots they should have kicked, in fairness. Yeah. They should have kicked probably 2 or 3 more. So it could have been 6 or 7, which would have been different. But this is a problem that's now not just a one-game sample size. This is becoming a problem for the 5 rounds so far.
That was a problem round one.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, Rama, and sounds like a little bit with you, Huff, is I think it's a quick fix, but it needs to start somewhere. Like, it needs to be the most important thing that David Teague and the coaching staff highlights. Like, you need to celebrate that.
Yep.
And you notice that when you go watch Richmond play live, you notice that when Melbourne plays, is they celebrate that stuff at quarter time, half time, even boundary throw-ins, if it gets knocked out of bounds, you see that.
The problem, so you talk about that efficiency, so Port Adelaide were able to do that. The problem for Carlton at the moment is between the arcs. There's no pressure.
166 was their pressure rating on Saturday night. Clear 18th.
Yeah, there's no pressure. It's Jim, they just walk through.
Exactly. What
teams
about?
Are walking through. So that's Collingwood on Friday night against West Coast through the arcs. West Coast just walk through them easily.
Yep.
You know, you've got Allen kicking 5, Darling kicking 5, Kennedy kicking 1, so 11 goals between, and you leave Darcy Moore forward. Thursday night, Richmond, 17 goals to 3 after quarter time, walk through the middle.
Their transition running, and St Kilda, speaking of walking, Their transition running was transition walking.
Now more
well, Kilda in the same boat in yes. my eyes.
Yes.
So you watch what teams are doing right now is because of this new man the mark rule, where they're getting that first kick out of defence is ultra important. If it's wide, it's easy to defend. If it's between the logos, you're in all sorts of trouble. You need to push that first kick out of defence wider right now more than ever.
If you can't find a direct opponent to cut out the release, which is the most important one, because if you release the pressure with a little 30-metre kick and then sides can get away from a contested situation, get back to the middle of the ground, but then don't just stand there. So it's take the next step. So first option, cut the release.
Yep.
Second option, get to the middle, and then immediately cut the release. So it's back to cut the release. It's not, watch the ball go. I'm going to start jogging back to half back because that's helping the team. It's not helping the team, but you're just plodding back to half back. It's release, back to the middle, then the release really quickly.
Yep.
The back to the middle is only just to quickly for you to, where's the next release?
Like, be on the inside of your opponent. Through the middle of the ground, keep pushing them wider and wider. If it gets to the middle of the ground, it's one kick inside forward 50. If it gets to the wide part, it's two, maybe three kicks inside forward 50.
The next 2 weeks will define Carlton's season. They've got Brisbane at home this week, as David Teague just said. Then they've got Essendon at the MCG, followed by the Bulldogs and then Melbourne. The reason why I say that the next 2 weeks define their season, I reckon they've got to win both of those games.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.